Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules on UCY.TV's third anniversary here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Yes, it is. It is our third anniversary at UCY. Who would have thought that I would have been sitting in this chair this long? It's a long 3 years. I was going to get out the noisemakers, but I don't know. It isn't one of those mornings. It is 75 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. Feels like it's going to be another roaster today. Like I said, these are the dog days of summer. I'm sure it is just about everywhere, except for, oh, wait a minute. Where's that park that's been getting down to freezing? Yellowstone. It was 28 degrees last night. So where did we leave off yesterday? We talked about all kinds of stuff, and then YouTube gave me all kinds of problems where it wouldn't render thumbnails, so I was having difficulty posting archives for a while. But let's see. I titled the show yesterday, CDC called out in Congress for hiding MMR autism link, and that was one thing out of many that we talked about, but I thought that that was a pretty pointed thing, and I actually found the C-SPAN video of Representative Bill Posey out of Florida telling the Congress about the doctor from the CDC who had been with the party of people who had shredded all the documents that showed the link between MMR and autism. And he kept all the hard copies. So they've now been entered into the official record with Congress, and he is calling for an investigation. That was pretty huge. Obviously, that didn't make headline news. I know I haven't seen that splashed around on New York Times or USA Today. Not even alternative media. I haven't seen much of anything at all about this out there. So I think it's huge because when we know we've dug into vaccines here long and hard, and I mean, this is way beyond anything that it ever used to be. It's not just aluminum and mercury and SV40 or recombatant. I mean, now we're talking about mad science gone, man. With RNA flipping nanoparticles that are going to turn you into who knows what, and with the big investment of Billy Gates into CureVax, you should be very afraid. And I know I say that all the time, but you really should be. Bill Gates scares the shit out of me. He is one evil mother. Oh, but where I really want to continue today, we're going to kick it off. I want to play that clip from C-SPAN of Posey blowing the lid off of the CDC. And remember, the CDC are the same CDC that told us that the swine flu vaccine was safe back in 1976. Also, they are the same agency that, oh, I don't know, lost the anthrax. And they're the ones who are making the mandates and the recommendations for your children to now be popped with, what, 100 vaccines? I mean, it's a pretty extreme number. I don't trust these assholes as far as I can throw them. And we did talk about the former head of the CDC then leaving in 2009 and becoming the president of the vaccine division within Merck. I mean, it's just so dirty. It is just so dirty. So anyway, here, I've been having all kinds of technical problems, but I'm not going to stress it, guys. I'm pretty tired. Let's see if we can pull myself in to play a clip. And then I'm going to share it because definitely it's got to go over the air. All right, here we go. Representative Bill Posey calls for an investigation of the CDC's MMR research fraud from C-SPAN. Hopefully my machine works today. I've been having major loading issues, like everything's on syrup. Here we go. It's trying. It's spinning. It's... It's my mouth.
Chair recognizes the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Posey, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today on matters of research and scientific integrity. To begin with, I am absolutely, resolutely pro-vaccine. Advancements in medical immunization have saved countless lives and greatly benefited public health.
We'll forgive him for that one.
That being said, it's troubling to me that in a recent Senate hearing on childhood vaccinations, it was never mentioned that our government has paid out over $3 billion through a vaccine injury compensation program for children who have been injured by vaccinations. Regardless of the subject matter, parents making decisions about their children's health deserve to have the best information available to them. They should be able to count on federal agencies to tell them the truth. For these reasons, I bring the following matter to the House floor. In August 2014, Dr. William Thompson, a senior scientist at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, worked with a whistleblower attorney to provide my office with documents related to a 2004 CDC study that examined the possibility of a relationship between mumps, measles, rubella, vaccines, and autism. In a statement released in August 2014, Dr. Thompson stated, "I regret that my co-authors and I omitted statistically significant information in our 2004 article published in the Journal of Pediatrics." End quote. Mr. Speaker, I respectfully request the following excerpts from the statement written by Dr. Thompson be entered into the record. Now quoting Dr. Thompson. "My primary job duties while working in the immunization safety branch from 2000 to 06 were to lead or co-lead three major vaccine safety studies, the MADDSP-MMR Autism Cases Control Study was being carried out in response to the Wakefield-Lancet study that suggested an association between the MMR vaccine and an autism-like health outcome. There were several major concerns among scientists and consumer advocates outside the CDC in the fall of 2000 regarding the execution of the Verstraten study. One of the important goals that was determined up front in the spring of 01 before any of these studies started was to have all three protocols vetted outside the CDC prior to the start of the analyses so that consumer advocates could not claim that we were presenting analyses that suited our own goals and biases. We hypothesized that if we found statistically significant effects at either 18 or 36-month thresholds, we would conclude that vaccinating children early with MMR vaccine could lead to autism-like characteristics or features. We all met and finalized the study protocol and analysis plan. The goal was to not deviate from the analysis plan to avoid the debacle that occurred with the Verstraten thimerosal study published in Pediatrics in 03. At the September 5th meeting, we discussed in detail how to code race for both the sample and the birth certificate sample. At the bottom of Table 7, it also shows that for the non-birth certificate sample, the adjusted race effect, statistical significance, was huge. All the authors and I met and decided sometime between August and September 02 not to report any race effects for the paper. Sometime soon after the meeting, we decided to exclude reporting any race effects. The co-author scheduled a meeting to destroy documents related to the study. The remaining four co-authors all met and brought a big garbage can into the meeting room and reviewed and went through all the hard copy documents that we had thought we should discard and put them in a huge garbage can. However, because I assumed it was illegal and would violate both FOIA and DOJ requests, I kept hard copies of all documents in my office and I retained all associated computer files. I believe we intentionally withheld controversial findings from the final draft of the pediatrics paper." End of quote of the doctor. Mr. Speaker, I believe it's our duty to ensure that the documents Dr. Thompson provided are not ignored. Therefore, I will provide them to members of Congress and the House committees upon request. Considering the nature of the whistleblower's documents, as well as the involvement of the CDC, a hearing and a thorough investigation is warranted. So I ask, Mr. Speaker, I beg, I implore my colleagues on the Appropriations Committees to please, please take such action. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I yield back.
Bam.
The gentleman from Florida, Mr. Posey, for 5 minutes.
Hold on, it started over.
All right, let me disconnect so we get rid of this
echo. Bam! Yeah. Now, how amazing is that? That the CDC, our very own federal agency that is responsible for making certain that our vaccines are safe to go into you and your children, is falsifying documents and any type of information that they don't want to get out there in the public. And one thing I found interesting about what he was reading is that this doctor who was the whistleblower had worked there from 2000 to 2006 during the time that that woman, and let's see if we can get her name, the CDC woman. Oh, Julie Gerberding, yes, former CDC head lands vaccine job at Merck. Julie Goldberding was at the CDC from 2002 to 2009. Dr. Julie Gerberding, former director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, was named president of Merck & Company's vaccine division on December 21st, 2009. Gerberding, who led the CDC from 2002 to 2009, stepped down when Barack Obama took office. So she was the lead CDC researcher under Bush. Well, or the CDC head under Bush. But what else happened? What else happened under Bush? Well, let's see what else happened under Bush. There was something that came out under the watch of President George Bush Jr., titled Project BioShield. I don't know if anybody's looked at this one, but add this up with all of the other crazy things we've seen, the new bioeconomy. I actually saw there's a new BioShield 2014. This is Project BioShield 2004. Project BioShield was an act passed by the United States Congress in 2004 calling for $5 billion for purchasing vaccines that would be used in the event of a what? Oh, a bioterror attack. This was a 10-year program, so 2004 to 2014, and they renewed it again. This was a 10-year program to acquire medical countermeasures to biological, chemical, radiological, and nuclear agents for civilian use. A key element of the act was to allow stockpiling and distribution of vaccines, which, now listen to this, which had not been tested for safety or efficacy in humans due to ethical concerns. What? We're going to read that sentence again. A key element of the act was to allow stockpiling and distribution of vaccines which had not been tested for safety or efficacy in humans due to ethical concerns. Now, like what? Like, oh, I don't know, the RNAi technologies? And, oh, what? We had a quote-unquote Ebola emergency. So good thing we had all of these Ebola mad science gone mad vaccines waiting in the wings that weren't allowed to be tested on humans because they were so funky and novel. But in the case of an emergency, we're allowed to open the doors and let those things through. This is so insidious, people. All right, back to this. This is the wiki on Project BioShield, but I actually have the document queued up too here somewhere. Efficacy of these agents cannot be directly tested in humans without also exposing humans to the chemical, biological, or radioactive threat being treated. In these cases, efficacy testing followed the FDA animal rule for pivotal animal efficacy. And we had read about this in regards to, like I said, the quote-unquote Ebola outbreak when they were working on all of these newfangled technologies, flipping switches on and off and putting nanoparticles in to go deliver payloads. That technology was not tested at all in humans. And lo and behold, with this outbreak, we now had, how many trials do we read about? I believe 6 different trials now in different nations, including places like France, where people lined up to get their newfangled vaccine. And oh, then we found out that it's almost 100% effective in their first round of trials. How great is that? I'm going to read a little bit more here. Since the 2001 terrorist attacks, terror, that was supposed to be a George Bush impersonation, terror. Since the 2001 terrorist attacks, the United States government has allocated nearly how much? $50 billion to address the threat of biological weapons. Now, what's even more interesting about that is how, and I talk about this, I mean, recently it's been almost every show I mention it, 1972, when Nixon inked, and I did look it up yesterday, it was called the Geneva, so I was right. It wasn't the Geneva Convention, though. It was the Geneva something. They inked it, banning biological and chemical weapons from being in use around the planet, at least legally. I mean, we know they're still out there, but it banned the use of biological and chemical weapons. But the one thing that Nixon said we were going to maintain was a vaccination program to act on the defensive. So that puts the vaccination program still basically under the umbrella of the Department of Defense. And with the CDC being in charge of that and dotted lines to the DOD, remember this whole anthrax thing, not only did the CDC let all those samples of anthrax, I don't know if they shipped them. I think they just, the CDC back last summer only shipped them to CDC offices, and they had quite a number of employees who were potentially exposed. But the anthrax hadn't been killed. They thought it had been using radiation, but it hadn't really been fully killed. But then we found just a few months ago that the DOD, a year later, after the CDC had gone up in front of Congress and they wanted to know how this happened, considering that anthrax is one of the bioterror agents that they were preparing for. Trust me, I took those classes, guys. They trained us to give out prophylaxis to the community in the event of a biological terror attack. Okay, this was back in 2006. And I didn't realize it was part of this Project BioShield, but it most certainly was. But the head of the CDC, and it wasn't that woman, she was long gone, whoever the guy is now, he was up there, oh, probably October, November, December of last year, saying this will never happen. We're trying to figure out. We got new protocols we're working on. A whole year later, we find out that the Department of Defense for 10, 12, 15 years had been doing the same thing, shipping what they thought was killed anthrax, and not just within their agencies, but they were shipping it to labs all over the world. People working on this stuff in low-level facilities because they didn't think it was supposed to be a biosecurity because it was dead. Well, guess what? It wasn't dead. It really caused me to question seriously the ability of these nincompoops. That's the word that always comes to mind. Nincompoops. With the most dangerous pathogens on the planet. We're going to get more into that because we've connected these dots before, but this whole MMR autism destroying documents and throwing them in a garbage can really pissed me off. Considering that MMR autism link is the one that they've been pointing to forever, where the poor parents who have children who are autistic now said, look, it's the MMR. They said, no, you people are just absolute lunatics, and they have completely defiled them in the media. So anyone who is anti-vaccine or even questions vaccinations is made out to be somebody who doesn't understand science. Well, no. The people who just eat this up hook, line, and sinker and believe everything these complete, utter, lying sacks of shit tell you are the ones that have some mental problems. Do your research. All right. So anyway, back to this. Since the 2001 terrorist attacks, the United States government, this is this Project BioShield, has allocated nearly $50 billion with a B dollars to address the threat of biological weapons. It's $50 billion in funding and in profits for all these big pharma companies. I bet you Merck made a lot. And hey, guess what? For all these congressmen that are probably invested as well, because half of Congress now are millionaires. And insider trading is kind of wink legal. U.S. funding for bioweapons-related activities focused primarily on research for and acquisition of medicines for defense. Biodefense funding also goes towards stockpiling protective equipment, increased surveillance and detection of biological agents, and improving state and hospital preparedness. This increase in this type of funding is mainly for Project BioShield, but significant funding also goes to Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, more affectionately known as BARDA. Yes, not DARPA. BARDA, B-A-R-D-A, part of the Health and Human Services. Funding for activities aimed at prevention has more than doubled since 2007 and is distributed to 11 federal agencies. Efforts toward cooperative international action are part of the project. Now, guys, this was 2004. And if you rewind back the last 2 days of shows and you think about some of the stuff we read about the bioeconomy, synthetic biology, the coming of how it's all going to save us, this nanotech and all these crazy RNA vaccinations, gene drives, CRISPR-Cas9, investments from millionaires all over the world into this technology. This is really scary. This happened, it began under the guise of good old GW. In September of 2012, BioPrepWatch reported that BARDA's annual report shows that the number of supplies of countermeasures for combating terrorist attacks is growing. Who would have thought it? According to the report, BARDA has acquired 107,000 doses of an antitoxin for Clostridium botulism, which is a decrease from the full 200,000 doses ordered in 2006. Well, how interesting. Botulism, well, didn't we have them threatening? I remember at one point a Pigmine video, them threatening ISIS running around and letting botulism loose on the salad bars. Do you remember that? They did too. Look out for your salad bar bioterror coming to a salad bar near you, to a cucumber near you. Number two, they had 57,102 doses of the monocular antibody raxibacumab. I've never heard of that one. They said that it treats anthrax. There's actually an old school antibiotic that can cause whatever the one is that causes the problem with your Achilles tendon. That's the one that they were giving us training on for handing out to anthrax victims back in 2006. But guess what? There's a new one, a monoclonal antibody, raxibacumab, which treats anthrax from where? Oh, Human Genome Sciences 2011. Yeah, like I want to be taking anything that's come out of Human Genome Sciences. This includes 20,000 doses under a 2005 contract, 37,102 doses of the 45,000 ordered in 2009, and at the 2010, there was a total supply of 36,102 doses. Well, phew, I'm glad that that's going to cover us for 36,000 people getting anthrax. Hopefully, it's not millions. Oh, but wait, there's more. 10,000 doses of anthrax immune globulin from CanGene, which also treats anthrax. So it looks like they're waiting for some sort of anthrax attack to try some of these new funky gene RNA DNA vaccines that are sitting in phase two trials. Remember, it's not ethical to move it up to phase three human trials unless there's an emergency. So you think that has anything to do with the 10 years worth or more of anthrax that's been shipped live with live spores to, 90 plus labs around the world? And still, I haven't seen any conclusion to that investigation. They had said originally, like, the large majority of the samples that they were testing in all these other labs were live, so they assumed that they all were live. So we got anthrax coming out our freaking ears at labs all over the globe. And how convenient that we just have all of these great new experimental, never before tested on humans, anthrax treatments sitting in the Project BioShield stockpile that they will be allowed to use on you and me in case of a national emergency. It's just amazing, the coincidences. It says by 2010, the supply was down, to 7,327 doses. What happened to 3,000 doses of this CanGene anthrax immune globulin? With spending on Rexbachimab coming to about $478 million. Oh, and look at this. Then they purchased 28.75 million doses. This is the one they're going to use on us. Of the anthrax vaccine BioThrax from Emergent BioSolutions. Yes, so I guess that probably that anthrax immune globulin and that monoclonal antibody Rexbachimab, those are probably the safe ones. Because there's only like 60,000 doses of those, so that goes to the people in charge. But these ones, the 28.75 million doses of this BioThrax from Emergent BioSolutions, yes, that will be for you, me, and our children untested. I'd like to look all these up. I didn't have a chance to do that. But if anyone's out there and wants to do a little digging, I will post this wiki underneath in the description after the show. So go nuts, please, and let me know what you find. And finally, what else was in the stockpile, according to BARDA? Botulism treatments as well, including 107,560 doses of botulinum antitoxin therapeutic, also from CanGene. They ordered 200,000 doses, and at the end of 2010, they had 97,000 waiting in the wings. So how does that make you feel? I know it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy and think to myself, wow, our federal government and the CDC is really looking out for my best interest, especially everything that we've seen since then. Not, absolutely not. Now, we also talked about yesterday in regards to the original 1976 swine flu outbreak, where an insider within the CDC, in an interview with 60 Minutes, came out and said that they knew that that swine flu vaccine that they launched on the American public, and they made it mandatory, by the way, they were trying to make it mandatory for every man, woman, and child to get that vaccination. They also spun up all kinds of propaganda. And then there were mega, mega, mega issues from a health perspective. An insider in the CDC came out in the 60 Minutes interview, and he 100% stated that they knew that there were neurological problems that that vaccine caused. And then when they interrogated the head of the CDC at that time, I don't know who it was in 76, he insisted that, well, maybe they didn't know. Well, maybe they did know, but it was for the good of the people because they were afraid of pandemic, which they're saying now that whole pandemic was a bunch of shit. Well, wait till you see what I found. So yesterday, we also started talking about the quote-unquote global pandemic of swine flu again in 2009 under Obama. And how convenient that that Julie Goldberger had just left as the head of the CDC and slid into the president's chair of Merck's vaccine division. And then we have a pandemic. And the pandemic was for swine flu. And oh my God, we had to get the vaccines out. Everyone line up and get your vaccine. And there were so many cases that the CDC even stopped counting. Do you remember that? I was like, why would you stop counting? Why would you stop? They even stopped testing. They're like, oh no, it's so widespread. We're just going to stop counting and stop testing. And just assume that it's swine flu because this is a global pandemic and everyone needs to line up. Line them up. Well, look at what I find yesterday. And I wanted to dig into this guy, but I don't know if I'm going to have time today. This is under another wiki, and it was titled 2009 Flu Pandemic. 2009 flu pandemic, or swine flu, was an influenza pandemic and the second of the two pandemics involving H1N1 influenza virus, the first one being the 1918 pandemic flu, albeit in a new version. First described in April of 2009, the virus appeared to be a new strain, which resulted, and I remember this because they said this has never before happened in nature, which resulted when a previous triple reassortment of somehow bird flu, swine flu, and human flu further combined with some Eurasian pig flu, leading to the term of swine flu. Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't say it in here, but I remember the news. They're like, we've never seen this before. Bird flu, swine flu, and people flu somehow all mixed together, and it's like this killer flu. It's global pandemic. Unlike most strains of influenza, H1N1 does not disproportionately infect adults older than 60, and this was an unusual and characteristic feature of the H1N1 pandemic. Yeah, if you remember, this one like was supposed to kill healthy people, right? Not the immunocompromised. Yeah, here. Even in the case of previously very healthy people, a small percentage will develop pneumonia or acute respiratory distress syndrome. And this manifests itself as increased breathing difficulty and typically occurs 3 to 6 days after initial onset. The pneumonia by flu can either be direct viral pneumonia or secondary bacterial pneumonia. Initially coined an outbreak, the stint, and yes, this is what got me. The stint began in Veracruz, Mexico. And I remember thinking if there was ever such a thing as a bioterror attack, they had warned us about Mexico. they had warned us about, this was in this FEMA training I went to in 2006. They had warned us about pandemics. They had warned us about terrorists. And they had warned us about terrorists running across the Mexican border with suitcase nukes. When I saw that, they're like, oh, that's ground zero was Mexico, and it spread everywhere. And, oh, my God, now it's all over the world. I was like, oh, Typhoid Mary stood in the middle of a Mexican square somewhere and just breathed on everybody. Initially coined in a quote-unquote outbreak, the stint began in the state of Veracruz, Mexico, with evidence that there had been an ongoing epidemic for months before it was originally recognized. The Mexican government closed most of Mexico City's public and private facilities in an attempt to contain the spread of the virus. However, it continued to spread globally, and clinics in some areas were so overwhelmed by infected people that in late April of 2009, the World Health Organization declared its first ever, never before seen, public health emergency of international concern. And yes, they have a cute little acronym for that as well. PHEIC. And in June of 2009, the World Health Organization and the CDC stopped counting cases. Ding, ding. And declared the outbreak a pandemic. Dun, dun, dun. And that is when the FDA fast track happens. That is when the doors open. That's when Pandora's box got freaking ripped wide open. Oh. So, we all remember that. Well, I came across a little tidbit in that wiki under the heading of accusations of conflict of interest in the 2009 global pandemic, with quotation marks. Now, who would think that there would be conflict of interest? Not me, no. All right, listen to this. In January of 2010, Wolfgang Wodgaard, a German deputy who trained as a physician and now chairs the health committee at the Council of Europe, so no small potatoes there, claimed that major global corporate consortiums had organized a, quote, campaign of panic, unquote, to put pressure on the World Health Organization to declare a, quote, false pandemic, unquote, to what? Sell vaccines. Yes. To sell vaccines. No, they would never do that. Wodgaard, his name is, last name, if you want to look him up, Wolfgang Wodarg, W-O-D-A-R-G. Wodarg said that the WHO's false pandemic flu campaign is, quote, one of the greatest medical scandals of the century, unquote. He said that the, quote, false pandemic, unquote, campaign began last May in a Mexican city where 100 or so normally reported influenza cases were declared to be the beginning of a threatening new pandemic, although he said there was very little scientific evidence for this. Nevertheless, he argued that the World Health Organization, in cooperation with some big pharmaceutical companies and their scientists, redefined pandemics, removing the statement that, quote, an enormous amount of people have contracted the illness or died, unquote, from its existing definition, and replaced it by stating simply that there has to be a virus spreading beyond borders and to which people have no immunity. The World Health Organization responded by stating that they take their duty to provide independent advice seriously and guarded against interference from outside interests. Announcing a review of the WHO's actions, spokeswoman Fidelia Chiab stated, quote, criticism is part of an outbreak cycle. We expect and indeed welcome criticism. Yeah, she probably said it through clenched teeth. And a chance to discuss it. In March of 2010, the Council of Europe launched an inquiry into, quote, the influence of the pharmaceutical companies on the global swine flu campaign, unquote, as a preliminary report. And it is now in preparation. Now, who would believe this now? Who would believe this? Not any of those pro-vaccine people. The pharmaceutical, global pharmaceutical companies had something to do and were in cahoots with the World Health Organization and, oh, the CDC to create a false pandemic to sell vaccines. Hey, tinfoil hat wearing Wolfgang Wurgarg, you must be smoking something. I mean, come on, guys. The writing is so on the wall. So now what gets me is that they are using the same criteria. Pull on the heartstrings. Little Johnny ruined everyone's Disney World vacations. Bam. Mandatory vaccines without exemption for children going to school in California. What? We had one case of meningitis in New York in the last 10 years. Bam. Meningitis vaccine required for all school-age children in New York State without exemption. What? Oh, the side effects? The vaccine adverse reaction report shows that it actually maims or kills 12 children out of 1,000 or 100,000. I don't know what the number was. But it came out that there are way less cases of meningitis ever in New York State than will be injured by getting the vaccine. You don't think that they had any butt slapping, palm rubbing going on with the New York State Health Department, do you? I mean, this is just disgusting, people. So now when we look at this new bioeconomy, where they're going to be ramping up nanotech RNA gene driving mad science aisle of Dr. Moreau, does that make you feel safe? Does that make you want to step right up and become a part of the new Healthy People 2020 plan? Yes, people, there is. There's Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015, and there is a Healthy People plan of 2020. Under that Healthy People plan of 2020, I came across another document yesterday. This is out of Health and Human Services. And hey, how interesting, because BARDA, didn't they work with BARDA? BARDA is part of the Project BioShield. And by the way, like I said, maybe we'll have to get to that tomorrow. Project BioShield was renewed, went up in front of Congress at the end of last year's session. So we need to see what they got in there. Out of Health and Human Services, there is a draft report up there right now under this Healthy People 2020 program called National Adult Immunization Plan from the National Vaccine Program Office. How nice. Dated February 5th of 2015. Executive summary. Vaccination is considered one of the most important public health achievements of the 20th century, and it continues to offer great promise in the 21st century. Yes, with nanobots and RNAi. Vaccines have saved lives and improve the quality of preventing serious infectious diseases and their consequences. However, the benefits of vaccination are not realized equally across the U.S. population. Those damn adults, their vaccination rate remains low in the United States, and significant racial and ethnic disparities also exist. Guys, R&D line item budget. Remember, When they get rid of that, we all become part of the genomics database, the Obamacare database, the whatever. They'll run the algorithms. They'll be able to pick what traits you have and what they find desirable. And remember, the DARPA lady, create life on demand. Or, hey, $29.95. I want all the records of everybody who has a recessive gene for this and a recessive gene for that, because we are going to then target them for testing our new untested vaccine. I don't know. I just see very, 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 very bad things on the horizon. This is like every Dr. Mangala nightmare I ever had. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services National Vaccine Plan, which was originally released in 2010, is a roadmap for vaccines and immunization programs for the decade between 2010 and 2020. Oh, is that why Bill Gates said that we're in the decade of vaccines? Good investment, Billy. While the National Vaccine Plan provides a vision for improving protection from vaccine-preventable diseases across the lifespan, vaccination coverage levels among adults are not on track to meet the Healthy People 2020 targets. The National Vaccine Advisory Committee and numerous stakeholder groups have emphasized the need for focused attention on adult vaccines and vaccinations. People, here it comes. The National Adult Immunization Plan outlined here results from the recognition that progress has been slow, and so there is a need for a National Adult Immunization Strategic Plan. We're going to hold you down, is probably what it says. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to this whole document today, but we will. Don't worry. The NAIP, that's the affectionate acronym for National Adult Immunization Plan. The NAIP is a 5-year national plan. And as a national plan, it will be required engagement from a wide range of stakeholders to achieve its full vision. The plan emphasizes collaboration and prioritization efforts that will have the greatest impact. And the NAIP also aims to leverage the unique opportunity presented by the implementation of what? The Affordable Care Act, more affectionately known as Obamacare. I told you. Ding, 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 ding. Ding, 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 ding. They got you in the database. And remember, the Health and Human Services was also the agency that had started that vaccination database that right now the only people that are in it are healthcare workers. They're trying to force all the healthcare workers to get their vaccinations. But it's going to be you and me. It's the quote-unquote surveillance part of Project BioShield. The NAIP is intended to facilitate coordinated action by federal and non-federal partners to protect public health and achieve optimal prevention of infectious diseases and their consequences through vaccination of adults. The NAIP includes indicators to draw attention to and track progress against core goals. These indicators will measure progress against set standards and inform future implementations and quality improvement efforts. The plan establishes 4 key goals, each of which is supported by objectives and strategies to guide implementation through 2020. Achieving these goals. Oh, here, wait. Goal 1, strengthen the adult immunization infrastructure. Goal 2, improve access to adult vaccines. So apparently CVS and Walgreens and Walmart aren't enough access. Goal 3, increase community demand for adult immunization. Well, how are we going to do that? Oh, wait, wait, I got something here. This is how we're going to do that. What? We're going to increase community demand for adult vaccines because we're just going to end up with all kinds of, oh my God, there's a resurgence of this and a never before seen of that.
Popular campsite at Yosemite National Park to shut down. Two squirrels just died of the disease at Tuolumne Meadows Campground. The site is being closed on Monday for 5 days so the area can be treated with insecticide. The plague is spread by fleas. A child at a different Yosemite campsite came down with the disease after a visit earlier this summer.
Yes, so we have plague in Yosemite, and wait, what else do we have?
I don't know if this is going to play.
Well, it won't play. Rocky Mountain. Oh, come on, lady. Talk.
An important health warning.
Hello?
Hello?
I told you.
About tick bites that could save your life. An Oklahoma mother, she lost all four limbs after she was bitten by a tick that was carrying a potentially deadly disease. It's called Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. It's on the rise with about 2,000 reported cases each year. And ABC's Dr. Jen Atchin joins us with more. Good morning.
Good morning, Jen.
You know, we don't hear a whole lot about Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. When we do, we associate it with the Rocky Mountains. Why are you concerned?
Well, here's what people need to know about this, Paula. This is a bacterial infection carried by some ticks. It has actually been reported all over the country, not just in the Rocky Mountain region. And it's been reported at all times of the year, although we are in peak tick season right now.
You know, remember, too, when we dug into the original biowarfare program in the United States, what did they use for disease vectors? Oh, ticks, fleas, and mosquitoes. We're seeing all this crazy stuff now. And how wonderful, like, we have this Paswan virus never before seen that is worse than Lyme, and it kills you right away, and there's no treatment for it. Hey, there's Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. It's not just in the Rockies. It's all over the country, and it's all times of the year. And this poor woman who just got bitten had to have both her arms and legs cut off. We have plague now in Yosemite National Park. Hey, I'm going to say that any unaware person that sees this, and I mean, this was like ABC and CBS News, when they see this stuff in the headlines, the day that they come out for a vaccine for this or a vaccine for that, because they're going to say, oh my God, look at, there's all because of global warming, people. It's all because of global warming, right? That's the mantra they're pushing. That is the propaganda that is going to fuel the demand of healthy people 2020.
Been reported in urban areas, and it's even been found in people who have not been camping. So people need to know what the symptoms are. These,
oh my God, so they live under your bed and in your closet just like ISIS.
Are vague and they can mimic a lot of viruses. We're talking fever, headache, nausea, vomiting, that characteristic rash may not appear in everyone. It can be difficult to see in people who have dark skin. So the key is, if there is a suspicion that these symptoms could be related to a tick bite, the recommendations are to start doxycycline antibiotics immediately, because time is of the essence.
Time is of the essence. You have to identify those symptoms within a small window.
Absolutely.
But you say prevention is key. What do you recommend?
Well, that's the ideal, right? So if you know you're going into the woods, you want to use insect repellent containing DEET. You want to wear long, loose, light colored clothing so it's easier to see these ticks if they're on you, because they're very small. They like to bite and bury themselves in hair-bearing areas. So you want to check through all of the hair. And if you find a tick, remove it entirely with a tweezers. No burning, no drowning it in alcohol
tweezers.
Or petroleum, just tweezers.
Yes, yeah. No Vaseline or burning cigarettes. Oh my God, and it buries itself in your hair. That's why actually this year I have not gotten on the ATV too much to go riding, because my hair is super long, and they were warning all over here in New York State that we have a complete epidemic of ticks this year. They're everywhere, and they could potentially be loaded with one of multiple debilitating diseases. How frightening is this? This is just unbelievably frightening. I think that they've launched biowarfare on the people of the United States in order to be able to implement their mad science gone mad project. And where does this end us? This ends us back to DARPA who has been sprinkling money into all of the research that has gone into these new Frankenstein vaccinations at all these different universities and all these different biopharma facilities. They've been sprinkling cash. They've been then spinning them out and testing them if possible. I mean, we looked when we first were looking at the quote-unquote Ebola outbreak and how many of those companies, a lot of them had just gone public, just done an IPO, and they had products that had been in development for years when they were privately funded from somebody, waiting in the wings because they were at phase two. They were untested ever on humans, and lo and behold, as soon as we had some sort of emergency, then they were able to test them on people. Well, I don't know if we're going to get too much further here today. Let's see if there's one more thing. Should we wrap this one up? We've talked about biotech and all the different crazy ways that they're also messing with our food. That's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day. All of this 3D printed crazy food crap with, oh, the new brand new nutritional supplements that they're putting in there and insect proteins. But here, this is the way we'll end this up. I saw a story out of RT yesterday. Yes, a new NASA grant explores turning human poop into astronaut meals. Now, they're already using urine, purified urine, in the space station for drinking water. Well, now they're gonna turn excrement into meals. If you remember back when I used to do that WTF show like 4 years ago, there was already a Japanese scientist who'd been working on the poop burgers. Says, with its interest in the manned missions to the moon and Mars, so if you're planning on getting off this rock and going to Mars, look out. NASA was looking, is looking for renewable ways to feed the astronauts and maybe all humans on Earth for the long haul. So the space agency granted $200,000 to a project that recycles human poop to be made into food. All right, guys, I only got about 10 seconds left. Make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next at 6 p.m. We have Anti-Tyranny News with Josh 8, Boys from New York with Continued Condition at 9, Truth or Talk with April and Burstein. Fitz Springmeier is the guest. And at 11, Intermedia with Nick and Denise.